Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Well, for all you no spinners out there, welcome to 2024. I'm Tommy Joe Lucia, and this is No Spin Rodeo, our 19th episode, is that right?
19th episode.
19th episode, first of 24. Welcome, the threesome here, the first lady of pro rodeo journalism, Kendra Santos, and the producer of this show, Greg Teagarden. Good morning, friends. How are y'all?
I'm good. You guys?
Doing great. Glad to be back.
For all of us, this is for the whole industry, these winter rodeos. We're in the winter rodeo season, and it's a mild combination of freezing to death, vitamin C, all of the magic mixtures and bottles of water, because if you get sick in the middle of one of these, it's a disaster, right, Kendra? So we'll talk about it later in the show, but Greg and I are both at the National Western. It has been
frigid.
96 hours below freezing, and I think I saw on the news 36 hours below zero. Kendra, how is it in California? And where have you been?
Yeah.
Well, I am in a down jacket in my house that after 13 months I'm almost back into, but I'm determined that if I spend a little time in here, that it's going to be finally finished. So I'm pretty excited about that and not really kicking the heater on much, because when the workers come in and out, they refuse to close the doors. So I don't want to have to try to heat the great outdoors. But anyway.
Well, what's left to fix on it? I mean, you've been,
13 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. You have facilities to scrub your toes. I mean, do you have the necessities in
there? Well, I had one barely working bathroom right before I went to the NFR. And when I came home, the toilet was inside the shower. Let's just put it like that. So because they had to pull the toilet and maybe to do like flooring, it's
gotcha.
It's been like that. And then when they put the washer and dryer in, and then the painter pulled it, and then there was a puddle of water on the floor, on the brand new wood floor, my heart. I'm just like, anyway, it's going to be great. And if not for my son, Lane, and his wife, Jane, I think it would never finish. And they have been like the glue that's getting it freaking done. So I'm grateful for that. We're almost there.
Fantastic. Greg, well, I know what you're doing because we've been living together for 3 weeks. But
yes, sir.
Greg, we all went to dinner last night, and Greg has his better half with him, which is one of the first times that he's brought her to an event. And her and Donna, my wife, have connected. And if you're a significant other for a working production crew, you have to figure out what you're going to do for 14 hours of the day, right, Kendra? Because your other half is in the building.
Yep.
Poor Oat can relate to yeah, your women. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, Kendra, why don't you give us kind of a rundown of what you're tracking in rodeo since we left Vegas, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, so I thought it would be fun to kick off the new year with a couple of 2024 rookies to look out for. There's a kid that I haven't yet met. He's 18 years old. His name is Nathan Bayous, and he's from Woodstown, New Jersey, you know, home of the famous Cowtown Rodeo, right? And his 2024 goal is to be the Bull Riding Rookie of the Year, and he just 40%ed him at the First Frontier Circuit Finals in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which I realize nothing to brag about. But of note, he was the only guy to make the whistle in the first two rounds. But he won all three rounds. He won the average, and he got out of there with $16,700, which is a huge kickstart, you know, in the rookie race. And it doesn't look like that money has hit the standings yet at 101 Pro Rodeo Drive, but I'm sure it will soon. And then he'll be the leader of the pack, you know, in the early going. So another rookie that jumped out at me that's making an early splash in the new year is bareback rider Weston Timberman. And I know that name will ring a bell with at least you, Tommy Joe. He just won the Montana Circuit Finals in Great Falls. And if the name sounds familiar, he's the son of 2006 Ram National Circuit Finals bareback champ Chris Timberman. And he's also the nephew of 2004 world champ Kelly Timberman. They say Weston's grandpa, Lonnie, actually traveled some with Chris Ledoux, which is kind of cool. But anyway, cool. Weston has a commanding early lead in the 2024 bareback riding rookie race. So that's cool. I some other notes that are standouts to me and the circuit finals. Clovis Crane. Does that name ring a bell to you?
It does indeed.
So this guy, I'm like, is this the same Clovis Crane or is it like junior? But no, it's him. He's from Lebanon, Pennsylvania, and he just won the bronc riding at the First Frontier Circuit Finals. Clovis won the all-around at the 2009 National Circuit Finals when it's so far back that it was Dodge instead of Ram. And that was, you know, 15 years ago. He was the first guy ever to qualify in three events for the National Circuit Finals, which...
But do you know who found him?
No.
Do you know who found Clovis Crane?
Well, no.
I'll tell you. If you give me a minute here. So we were I was a part with Jack Sperling, Hollywood, with creating an event called The Toughest Cowboy. And the concept of that in 2006, 2007, and 2008 was what we wanted to do was create a competition, a rough stock competition where you had to compete in all three disciplines. You had to be a bareback rider, a bronc rider, and a bull rider. We did our tryouts at Mesquite. And I remember when I was putting it together, I was concerned that there were three event guys out there. Okay. And we put together the tryouts at Mesquite. And let me tell you some of the names that showed up. A lot of them were World's Toughest guys because I was in World's Toughest, you know, had owned it. And Clovis Crane was one. Wade Sundell was another. Now, remember, Wade was a bull rider. And I didn't even know Wade could ride broncs. And so Donnie Gay is sitting with me in tryouts. And we're looking to cast 12 guys to go on tour for this televised Toughest Cowboy tour. And some standouts. For one, we like the story of this Clovis Crane kid from Pennsylvania because nobody's heard of him. And he rides everything. Now, he doesn't ride it great, but he rides his bulls, he finishes his broncs, and he gets through his barebacks. Then there's Wade, who I know as a bull rider, right? Donnie knew him as a bull rider, and Wade nods his head, and I mean spanks a bronc. And I'm like, Wade walks by the front of the fence, and I'm like, Wade, why haven't you been entering the bronc riding? Like, you are significantly better at riding broncs than you are bulls. And then the last one was Shane Proctor. Because I had called Shane, I said, Shane in college, and he goes, yeah, yeah. And I said, you want to try this? And he said, yeah. And it was so a lot of these guys that went on after that, we gave away three ranches at Toughest Cowboy. If you want it, you want a ranch. And one of the ones that was really scrappy, Eric Wolford, little bitty guy that could ride everything, but was kind of he weighed 90 pounds. So his injury ratio was high when you were getting on three. But sorry to interrupt you, but I've known Clovis. He's got a fantastic horse program, and he's a dedicated athlete. So he's one of those guys that, you know, he doesn't ever stop training, and I bet he hasn't since then. And Clovis isn't always as flashy, but as consistent, Kendra, is always consistent. And I saw some videos. He's riding good. He's riding good.
Well, I'm guessing, for one, he's 44 years old. That's of note. And I'm guessing that if you wanted, I mean, I can only think of one world class in those three events in recent history, and that's Ty Murray. That's not very recent now. I suppose I'm getting so old. But I'm guessing that you had to really look at mostly college kids to get those three events, my guess.
Yep.
I will also say that of those you just mentioned, Shane Proctor did just declare that this is his last year of riding bulls in 2024. So that's cool. And, you know, that's not always easy to do up front. so many people will, you know, go and then, you know, think about it maybe after it's over, and then it's like you go out with a whimper. I kind of like his brass to declare up front, this is my last year. Like, it may go great, it may go terrible, he may get hurt at the first one, he may make the NFR. I mean, we don't know, but I think it was pretty gutsy of him to make that declaration in January. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yep.
Okay, so the Montana Circuit Finals just happened, and another 40% domination. Ty Erickson and his Black Horse Crush swept all three rounds, won the average and the year-end titles in the bulldogging there. I see that they have Shelby Beaujolais Medjid down in the results, but she told me in Vegas that she's January 1st. She's Shelby Medjid. No more hyphenating, but she won the average in the breakaway and the year end at the Montana Circuit Finals. And her husband, Haven, is the year end Montana Circuit Finals tie down champ. And Haven's heater continues. I mean, what he did at the finals was spectacular. Leading the average and setting a new world record or arena NFR record, all of it. It was amazing. And he also just won the one header at Odessa for almost five grand. So those two are rolling. And before we leave the Montana Circuit Finals, I would love to mention that it was really fun to see Dustin Bird, the five-time NFR header with over $1 million in team repping earnings, who went the way of Coulter Todd and went home to raise his family. He just won the Montana Circuit Finals with Ike Folsom. Bird and his bay mare Dolly were such an unforgettable force for so many years. And but he's 1 year shy of Clovis Crane. He's 43 years old now, Bird is, and he's still got it. So I thought that was cool. I would love to double back for a second to Odessa to mention Just Tierney just won the steer up in there for the third straight year. It's hard to do at any rodeo.
Yeah.
And though we didn't see Stetson right there, little brother Statler got the win. And Statler, you know, the youngest of this batch, of this generation of rights, he's 20 now, and he's been in the top 20 the last couple of years. And so an early strike like this for him is a big deal for momentum's sake riding into the new year. So good for him. On the subject of Stetson, I was working about a week and a half ago at the Lazy E, and I got a text from his surgery, and I had to hold my phone up and twist it around to try to figure out which body parts he was showing me. It was pretty gruesome, but I'm like, wait a minute, what is this? So then he sends it back, and he's got arrows like, this is my butt, this is my knee, this is, and I'm like, whoa. But the big headline here is, we all know that he pulled a hamstring. We all know at the, you know, October at his circuit finals, the Wilderness Circuit Finals, we all know that he finished it off at the NFR. He just, you know, he only got on 3 of 20 head there, but he won his fifth straight all around title. But I did not take from that the severity of this. He did have the surgery on Wednesday right after the NFR. He's out until June. That, I did not understand that when we left Las Vegas. And so I really appreciate him staying in touch. And I did not understand that we were talking about that. So I will say, like, he has almost 10,001 that he won in the fall, you know, before he got hurt. But this is kind of deja vu of the Ty Murray days where he dominated and you couldn't beat him. But then Ty went through a shoulder, his other shoulder, a knee, those surgeries. And every time Ty went down, here came the Joe Beavers and the Fred Whitfields and pulled out their head ropes, you know, and the all-around race, the complexion of it completely changed from domination of Ty to these other guys. And so, like, I got to see Riley Webb team rope the other day, which I didn't realize that was a thing, but him and Dylan Hancock, last year's all around and tied on rookie of the year, roped. And I think they might do that a little bit more this year, because I went back and looked, and it's like, wait a minute, Stetson, the difference between what Stetson won in two events, not having the NFR in 2023, and what Riley Webb won in one event to win his first gold buckle, was 26,000. That's less than one go rounds win there, right? So you're going to see a lot more people throwing their name in the hat, because we're now going to spot the field. I mean, Stetson spotting the field 6 months, and that's a significant note. Anyway, moving on to our second home at the South Point in Las Vegas. The American just had its West Region Finals in Las Vegas, and the top five in each event now advance to the American Contender Tournament Finals in Abilene, which is February 10th. And the American itself will be held March 9th at Globe Life Field, where we had, the 2020 NFR. And the top five in the 2023 World Standings also will go straight to the American. So other regional finals that are coming down the pipe, I think this month, are in Lexington, Kentucky, and Oklahoma City. And some of the advancers, a couple of the advancers that I were at the full range of the spectrum are like JJ Hampton, veteran, icon, cowgirl in the breakaway roping, and the reigning college champ, Q Taylor from Cal Poly, my alma mater, won the bronc riding. Another big event that just happened over the weekend was at Petco Park in San Diego. And since receiving the initial press release announcing that it was going to happen, and I immediately wrote back and asked if it was PRCA, and they immediately responded no. Since then, I'd love to tell you more, but it's been crickets. And I've asked again, and I've asked multiple people for results and photos, because I'd love to. I mean, that was a gutsy move to put on a big rodeo in a ballpark in Southern California. But the two things that I saw from there, the two things I know, I know that Bridger Anderson won the bulldogging, and I know that Tuff Cooper won the calf roping. And I only know that because they posted on social media, but I have no other results or news. And again, I tried, but nothing. So I don't know. Maybe they want it to be a secret.
Interesting. I got a call about production on that event. It's a $620,000 event, non-sanctioned. And then I didn't hear anything. And I'll say this, that it looked like the production of the event was good. It looked like the ticket sales on the event, I heard, were good. I think that the Padres ownership getting involved in it is good. There was a lawsuit filed to shut it down, and a judge ruled in favor of rodeo, check in the good mark. Now, that lawsuit isn't over. The judge allowed cameras. This is what I understand it. The judge allowed cameras in the building so that the people that brought the lawsuit could prove or deny or be denied abuse to animals. And so then there's this. So they brought in the Indian relay races to that event, which is cool. It's cultural. And that was, I think the reason that they got the event to happen was from the cultural angle, with the amount of Hispanics and different things in that market tied back to rodeo roots. So they brought in, they called it the indigenous race, Indian relays, which were really kind of made famous, I think, in the south of the border from Canada, from the Calgary Stampede. Now, in that event, they ended up having the relay race. So as you know, in these stadiums, when you produce them, you make an arena, and typically it's a really big football field or baseball field. And so you have these perimeter areas that you dirt that end up being warm-up arenas and access arenas around to the roping ends and stuff. And again, this is I have not had any official conversation with anybody, but it looks like they did these relay races on that outside perimeter. Was that a good idea? I don't know or not, because I didn't walk it. I probably wouldn't have done it, but meaning that there was probably some obstacles, right? It probably wasn't a good track. And if you don't know what Indian relay races are, they ride bareback, they run a full circle. One guy jumps off, another guy jumps off, and it's a relay race with basically the horse being the baton. Very cool, and takes some talent. And at the Calgary Stampede, it's really cool. But the people at the Calgary Stampede are obviously and probably the best Indian relay racers. Well, to make a long story short, not good for the rodeo, and the not good column was in an exchange. When one guy jumped off a horse, another one jumped on. The horse got loose and started running and hit the fence full on, hit the panels at a full run, and then collapsed. Now, if you look at the video that was passed around on social media, it would appear that the horse was significantly injured because he didn't move. So some inside baseball stuff. That event hired Jed Pugsley, who you remember is formerly a PRCA animal advocate. They hired him. Doesn't work for the PRCA anymore, and he's the one that's been doing the releases and monitoring on the animal, you know, animal side of that, animal care side of that. And he's made some releases, and the releases are, you know, they did have a ambulance, you know, a horse trailer, and they took the horse out, and they, according to reports, the horse went back to the Indian relay team the next day. And I can say that I don't have, I haven't talked to anybody, but that's been the reporting on it. And that was the reporting that was released in the market. And if that's the case, then the horse knocked itself out and then came to, because the horse, you know, the horse was definitely out. And so there was a lot of phone videos and stuff. The good news is that there isn't a whole lot of them because it wasn't expected, right? Nobody had their phones unless they were, you know, but I guess the horse is okay, which is good. But that becomes a new battle, you know, and so it raised a question to me that I want to bring up from an industry standpoint. Remember, Kendra, you're kind of the athlete's advocate, and I'm an industry advocate. I think we have to be real careful overall. I think it's really great that because of Yellowstone and stuff, people have great ideas about taking this sport to new places. But when you go into hostile territory, okay, Southern California, and you go into a non-traditional rodeo thing, I would just say that we have to be careful. You know, and it looks like that they did everything right, that they, you know, because it can take one bad situation to go backwards 15 years in our efforts to prove to the world that this isn't a cruel sport. And so, you know.
And I am the daughter of a lifelong cowboy veterinarian, and so I appreciate it probably in more depth than most. Also, having, you know, worked at high levels of media on all of this, but my understanding, and I have not tracked down any videos to see it, but what I was told yesterday by some phone calls of people who said they had eyes on it, was that in an effort to really pull out the indigenous factor, they had headgear on the horses, beaded headgear that was supposed to look very ornate and cool. And somehow in the stampede, it basically acted as a blindfold on this horse. And so, you know, scared the horse. He's running blind, literally can't see where he's going and hits the fence. So it was like a freak accident, probably done, you know, with good intention, but perhaps that's a real take home to not put something on there that could, you know, you don't mean for it to cause harm. You mean for it to look cool, but if it can, you know, blind a horse that's running 9-0, imagine that's just not a good deal. I also mentioned on the Indian relays, another place that is hugely popular is Pendleton. And yep. I saw some of the coolest relay racing a couple years ago. Oat took me to a do you say they called it a black rodeo in Oklahoma? I don't know if there's a more politically correct way to say it. That's what all the
we just did one, and it was Cowboys. Called the MLK rodeo, okay. Here in Denver.
Well, that is where I saw the coolest relay races of my life. I have never seen athletes. They couldn't have been going faster, and they're getting on and getting off at full speed. I was stunned at how the athleticism. It was insane, but it was very fun to watch. So I can see, you know, the temptation of that. I'm not saying that was a bad idea at all. It might have been just one headgear adjustment away from being brilliant, you know, to do something so exciting to watch. I don't know. But the other thing that I did, you know, here out of Petco was that because it wasn't a PRCA rodeo, they had to, or they purposely like drew stock really late and stuff because they didn't know who was and was not going to show up. And some significant headline types did not show up. And so that was kind of a challenge for people producing it, which you are a producer, so you can relate, I'm sure, to that. But you know, the two people who were the front guys that they paid to initially throw out the first pitch and release it, neither one was there for different reasons.
And I'll say it, you know, I'll pitch it out there. Rocker Steiner was, a poster child of this, and I don't know why Rocker didn't ride, and I'm going to try to find out. You know, if you're going in and promoting it in advance, I would have thought that he would have been there. Now, there may be an injury. There may have been a draw. You know, they may have been entered somewhere. I do not know the details, but listen, overall, it was a good produced event from what I saw. I didn't see the whole thing. And so that's important to me, is that if we're going to put a product in front of new fans, that it's done well. And I think it was done well, and that's good. Tomas was there. It's a cool venue. And they sold tickets, which is fantastic, because the second risk you run in these big events is somebody who's writing the checks, losing a fortune and never doing them again. So all things considered, it looks like it probably financially did okay. Don't know that it made a lot of money, but hey, took a risk, took the product in, delivered the product relatively good. My only thing as a caution is as an industry, when you go into hostile territory, and that is hostile territory, you need to be working as an industry to protect it. I don't care if you're sanctioned, non-sanctioned, this rodeo contractor, that rodeo contractor, this cowboy, this is our livelihood. This is what we all do. And so we should be concerned when a rodeo goes to hostile territory. And we should do everything we can to protect our industry, regardless what flags they're flying, right? What sanctioning bodies, you know, and
It's all of our business.
Yeah. We got to be careful that we don't want amateur operations going into hostile territory, because it can affect us negatively. That's all I
have
to say.
Well, yes, and it spread like wildfire across the country. The thing is, also, for me, you know, the generation before me, California, you know, that's where so much of rodeo came from. We all know that. So that's a really difficult thing in my lifespan to see. And I saw something. Someone posted the other day the list of Flying U rodeos from 1969 or something. It was like over 100 rodeos. This was like California was rodeo hotbed USA, you know, a generation before me. And that's a sad slope.
I was concerned. The first thing that I heard about this event was when I figured Reno would be involved. Okay, because you've got a guy who has shaped our industry in hostile territory. I mean, this is a guy who is basically, you know, been inside the Alamo, right, for a long time, and his dad, and they have done a fantastic job. And he's constantly monitoring the welfare globally of our industry of animals and how they're treated, because he lives it every day. So when I heard he wasn't involved, I'll be honest with you, I did not have a good feeling. Okay. Now, you know, cause there's such great things that, you know, Reno comes from a family, and Reno is incredibly intelligent and like I said, operates in hostile territory. So anyway, without beating that down too much.
I also do understand from inside people that even though he may or may not have been specifically, you know, on the payroll in some capacity, he did lend sage advice and wisdom, and he was at least in part responsible for, you know, advising that they take measures, you know, in case of this, in case of that, so that he did have a hand in perhaps, you know, making the most of things that went south, because even though he wasn't paid to do it, he still cares enough. And
what options did he have?
Well, right? But I mean, good for him.
I mean, that's where he makes his living.
He could have sat back and let them fail, but instead he offered some wisdom.
He couldn't, or he shouldn't let them fail, because that's literally their legacy is based there.
And he didn't. So good for him.
And he didn't. And I agree with that. Overall, glad it went relatively good. It went good. It's good for rodeo. I can say, if I have to check on the mark on it, right, it could have been worse. We did have an injury for a horse that they handled well, obviously, and sold tickets. And so glad.
And the contestants seem to really give it high marks. So that's good news too. You know, that's from my point of view anyway.
Yeah. Good. Well, I give it good marks, and I'm glad, and I'm really support the fact that the Padres and their family, Petco Park, got involved and defended our brand of entertainment. So that's good. That's big. And then we delivered something that they could defend. So onward. Next topic.
Okay. Well, you want to get some feedback, Greg, before we go on to some sponsor news and some talking about Denver, where you guys are making your home right now?
Yeah, sure. We've had some pretty good feedback, or a couple really good questions during our time off. One question was about the NFR judges and whether they were appointed by the PRCA or if they were athlete selected.
Well, I'm not going to go on the record, but we will find out that answer. Kendra, you may know, but I think I don't think it's exclusive athlete driven. There may be athlete stuff involved, but the truth is I don't know the specifics, but I will find out for sure and report to you, Greg, and no spinners exactly, but I'm pretty sure that is driven by the PRCA and their judging program, who gets to go there and judge. And I think it's on metrics, by the way. I don't think it's, I think that what I'm finding out as I dig more and more into the PRCA and underlying things like judges, and we can get in it in another podcast, instant replay, Tom is driving them on a data point, and they're collecting data and they're making decisions on results. And I'm thinking that there's probably a lot that goes into that on judges, on results. But I can find out the answer. Kendra, do you know more on that?
What I know, I feel like there was an era, you know, in years past where it was a little bit more contestant centric as far as input on that. At this time, it's my understanding that the PRCA decides who goes to the NFR. That's the way I understand it, but I haven't specifically gone digging, but that's what I think it is.
Well, we will get you a fact-driven answer. I'm 90% that you're right, Kendra, that this is through their judging protocols that they make that happen. What do you got? What's next, Greg?
So I got one more. It's about the PRCA Hall of Fame. Someone was asking what the criteria was to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and if you have to be a world champion, or should you be a world champion to be inducted?
I know that answer. I, having served on that before, there to be inducted as in the contestant and as a contestant in any event or in the all around, there's a minimum requirement of one gold buckle. And the example that would be really easy for people to understand, you can be inducted as a notable, for example, Denny Flynn or Ace Berry, not world champions, but they were inducted as notables. The example on the contestant side that would be really easy for people to relate to is when Robert and Billyette Bauer were inducted together in the bronc riding, Dan was not, Craig Latham was the fourth member of their buddy group. And so there would have been two ways to go about that. One, the way it happened where Billy and Robert were inducted with their you know, as in the bronc riding with their minimum criteria of a gold buckle. Or the other way they could have gone about it would be to, they could have, someone could have nominated the Etbauer brothers, you know, under the notable category, I suppose. That would have been an option. But as it stands, to be an individual inductee, you do need a minimum of a gold buckle.
Unless you're notable.
Unless you go in a different category, yes.
Well, Greg, remind us and the No Spinners, you can email us or you can text us.
You can text us at 817-668-2395 or email us at nospinfeedback@gmail.com.
And I'll also say on a PS on the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame, I believe that January 31st is the deadline for nominations for this year's class.
Yeah, it's a written nomination process, correct, Kendra?
Yes.
You fill out a written nomination process, and then there's a board that reviews that, correct? That's
correct.
The process.
Yes.
Written nomination, board reviews. Yeah.
Right. Which is different than Oklahoma cool. City. Yes.
And what's the difference?
And the difference on that is Oklahoma City, which the deadline was December 31st, nominations, then it goes before a board, and then it goes onto a ballot, and everyone with a membership is entitled to a vote, and that's how it's decided. So it's pretty different, actually.
It is pretty different. And that's two different, very unique approaches. Wow, that's good. That's really good. I heard about the ballot, but I didn't have it clarified. So that's cool. That's very cool. So they're doing their regional contender tournament for the American, which I think is good. That was established a couple of years ago in a better effort to form a path to the American. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about in upcoming podcasts, not today, but that is what I would call the pissing match in Arlington. You know, you've got the American. They moved to Globe Life Field. And now, interestingly enough, the professional bull riders have partnered with Kid Rock for the Kid Rock Rodeo. And I'm going to tell all you know spinners out there, I'm going to dig into this because I've been asking questions. Basically, can someone tell me what the hell this is about? Like, how does this work? It's team rodeo, I've heard. They're going to compete head-to-head teams. I did hear that they've selected coaches. Luke Branquino is the commissioner. And, you know, this stuff's all great. It seems like we do this in this sport all the time. We take a wagon wheel and we make it round again. And that's fine. And I hope it's successful. I do. I hope every event's successful because that's good for all of us. But I do think, Kendra, I would challenge you and me. I think we need to do a little digging into this Kid Rock Rodeo, figure out if they know, you know, are there rules published? And these are things that I haven't had time because we're in Denver to dive into. I can tell that the PBR is heavily promoting it and, you know, obviously taking a step into rodeo here by doing this. And we'll see where that goes. You know,
I'll say this to a couple things on that note. Sorry if I interrupted you. Did I?
You did not.
Okay. I apologize if I did, but, I, at the Lazy E, the Stampede at the E the other day, the last person, you know, the World Champions Rodeo Alliance is going to have a team at this Kid Rock Rodeo. Bobby Moat is going to be the coach. They're going to be called the Free Riders. And that's going to be how that team is selected is the top two at Rodeo Corpus Christi in May, which is now a WCRA event. This is the WCRA has had this Triple Crown of Rodeo concept where if you win three majors in a row, which the only person to successfully do that has been R.C. Landingham, did that, December of 2022. The last person with eligibility for the Triple Crown of Rodeo is barrel racer Stephanie Fryer from Texas. She just won the Stampede at the E after, you know, so she's now won two in a row after winning Rodeo Carolina before that. So now at Rodeo Corpus Christi, if she wins that, she will win the million, but she is the last eligible contestant for the Triple Crown of Rodeo, which was a real headline program. And my understanding is now that support is going to shift to the Kid Rock Rodeo.
Yeah, so Triple Crown's out.
Triple Crown is going away. So the coaches that I can think of, we have Cody Ohl, Fred Whitfield, Bobby Moat is it Trevor Brazil? Charmaine James? Mm-hmm. Who am I missing?
I don't.
Did I maybe not see anybody from the Roughstock end as a coach?
Maybe Casey.
I didn't see him on that stage.
Yeah, the only one that I paid attention to was Bobby Moat. And let me tell you why. Because, you know, the WCRA, who I was partners with, and I respect that organization and what they've done in the business. But they have the virtual rodeo qualifier, okay, which if you've heard about this, I'll do a brief summary. But essentially, it's an app-driven opportunity for contestants to nominate a rodeo, anywhere in the country, and pay a fee depending on how strong the competition is in that rodeo. So let me give an example. If you're roping at a jackpot somewhere, you pay a smaller fee, but you get less points if you win. So you get points if you win, and it's all tabulated by the WCRA in this app. And if you do the Utah Days of 47 rodeo and win, it has a larger nomination fee, but you get considerably more points for winning a rodeo of that size. So let's talk about the business model of the VRQ. You have to have a reason to nominate, right? You know what I mean? You want to collect these points so that you then are eligible to compete in a major WCRA event. And if you take away the Triple Crown, right? You take away the Triple Crown, that was the big apple at the end of the driver for people to nominate as cowboys, right? You nominate, and, you know, because I said to people like Tim O'Connell, I said, you know, last years, these guys that dominated like a Stetson, right? Why wouldn't you play this game? If you consistently beat the chaps off of people, go get their million, right? I mean, if you're that dominant, take the million. Well, unfortunately, that program's ending. Now, there were conversations before it started, before the WCRA, there were conversations started with us, Salt Lake, other major rodeos, which, by the way, I'm going to reintroduce those conversations because I would love to see the Utah Days of 47 Rodeo and some other big rodeos combined together to create a similar type opportunity. Win our event, win multiple events. I still like the Triple Crown. Keenan Vine and I were the ones that first started talking about a Triple Crown type project in rodeo, right, that brings people together and has major money. So I'm going to continue that conversation. It's not good that it's went away. So my point is, it sounds like that the Kid Rock Rodeo, Kendra, that rodeo, million-dollar rodeo, ends up being the replacement Big Apple, right? A reason to do VRQ, right? Reason to nominate so that you get into that rodeo. Bobby Moat is the coach of the team that I think the team has fielded. Again, I haven't read any rules, but I believe that Bobby Moat's team is filled based on VRQ points.
Okay. That's his team. I thought it was filled by the top two, same difference probably, the top two at Rodeo Corpus Christi in May. It was my understanding was how he was going to fill his team called the Free Riders. But that's indirectly. Same difference, right?
Indirectly,
you
right.
You have They're to get there through. Before you can try to right. You win, right? And I also say on the Kid Rock Rodeo, I did receive an email over the weekend asking me for a 30-minute phone call from someone very high up at the PBR to talk to me about the Kid Rock Rodeo. So I will know more moving forward. And I always have a lot of questions, so I'll get more answers. And I will say, my dear friend Kyle Jones, who runs WCRA Media, we were working together at the Lazy the other day, and he had this brilliant idea. They do something. He does something fun with his media efforts called carpool karaoke, which he does, you know, with cowboys and cowgirls, you know, contestants. He had the guts to ask if Kid Rock would do carpool karaoke, and guess what? He said yes. So awesome. That's pretty fun. And my understanding is that from him is that Kid Rock is going to do carpool karaoke with the coaches. So we might get to see Charmaine James and Trevor Brazil sing. That'd be pretty fun, right?
Ah,
on a party bus. That's really cool. Really cool.
That is cool. That is cool. That is cool. And then the other kind of follow-up thing that people have heard, and that is, and that I questioned, and now I'm going down other paths, but the PBR did leave Dickies Arena, did move one big event, and everybody, you know, is like, wow, because Dickies Arena in Fort Worth, it's a good venue. From what we're hearing in the underground, that's kind of directly related to one of the big partners with the PBR is U.S. Border Patrol. And there's been in some other venues in the past, and I don't know the complete specifics, but, you know, there's been some pushback on Border Patrol agents. These are federal officers. And so there's been some, you know, I think it kind of goes with the political territory in the nation. But I think that it had to do with, you know, the PBR's support of the U.S. Border Patrol and Dickies having some concern. And so, you know, they're going to do their event in Cowtown Coliseum, which really the PBR runs now down there as a whole. If you were wondering why the move, there was some, you know, there was some tension in some of those sponsorship offerings of the PBR and the management of Dickies Arena, which kind of created that separation. So we'll continue to follow those stories.
Do you want to talk about some sponsor news that you have?
Yeah. So let me tell you where this first started for me. We produce for the PRCA the Fan Zone in Las Vegas. And if you walked through the Fan Zone this year, typically Ram Rodeo spends, you know, Chrysler and Ram Rodeo, they spend six figures in the Fan Zone in the one corner with big trusses and lights and audio and stuff. And going into this, 100X Marketing, who's the third-party marketing rep for Chrysler and Rodeo, they weren't giving us much details because they didn't have details. And at that point, they were tying it back to some union. Remember that all of the auto workers were on strike, and they were being told, I think, from corporate that they didn't have time to focus on those kind of things because of the strike. Well, long story short, the Ram reps came, put trucks in there, but it was a much, much smaller activation in front of the NFR than it's ever been for Ram, which made me kind of go, right? If you're gonna spend money in professional rodeo, and this is the Super Bowl, sorry, no spinners that don't like that, you got to activate there in a big way. So that was my first indication. And then I started hearing some grumblings. Tommy Joe, have you heard anything about Ram Rodeo? I said, no, but they didn't activate in Vegas. Well, here's what I understand. After the NFR, Ram, there has not been an official response. I know this for a fact from Chrysler about what they're going to do in rodeo. However, I do know that the budgets did not get a haircut. They got slashed. And which is an indication that Chrysler and that are pulling money out of rodeo and not going to continue at the level they have. And I've been told from pretty significant sources that there will only be six funded Ram rodeos in 2024. Six. Now, couple things in and around that. For one, all of us rodeo committees, we have dear friends that are Ram rodeo reps. Some of the greatest people on the production side in this business are the Ram rodeo reps, right? We're friends with them. We see them at all these rodeos. These are the guys that show up and coordinate between corporate, the dealership, and the rodeo. And so you got to ask yourself, with all those Ram reps out there, it's cut to six rodeos. There's these guys, they're probably wondering how they're going to keep going. Now, 100X Marketing, Mike Orman and Lori Joe, I know that they have other relationships with other partners. So they do the same thing. They service the brands at the local rodeos. They have other relationships with other partners, and we'll see how that evolves. But I have a concern for all those Ram reps, you know, Jesse here in the National Western and all the guys, there's six or eight of them here, all living in trailers. All of us are froze up. We have no water. It's nowhere to, if you think the fact that your toilet was moved into the shower is a problem, you should be in an RV in a square box, and you really can't go to the bathroom without it freezing before it hits the plastic. And so, you know, these guys work hard, and six rodeos for Ram. So I did a little research, and I'm going to dig into this more, but there's a relationship between corporate and the PRCA. Oh, by the way, while we're saying that, in case you hadn't heard, Steve Rumpless left as the director of PRCA Properties. And what I hear is that they're going to bring back Paul Woody, who left, who went work for the Force Racing team, the drag racing team. He's coming back. He worked under Steve Rumpless. I do like Paul. I do always wonder why in the PRCA circles that they don't go after fresh blood, new ideas and concepts, but that's no slight to Paul. That's just a question. But Rumpless gone, which leads into this. So there's a corporate contract with PRCA Rodeo, right? With Ram. And there's been no official anything that has been released on how this cutback, right, impacts the corporate program with the PRCA. We know that the cutbacks have impacted 100X marketing and activation at rodeos because it's cut down to six.
Can I ask what it was before? When you say six, like it's a tiny number, do you know what it was before? Ballpark or no?
I don't, but I will say, and I can find out that answer, but I can say it was well over 60 to 100.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's perspective on it. Yeah.
And I'll get the real numbers of that, right? I'll find out what those real numbers are. I should probably have had that information, but haven't had time. So this is not a small cutback. Here's the way it is. If we all drive trucks for a living, there was a time when I was clowning, when Ram came out with the diesel, the six straight diesel, everybody had Rams and we're driving them because they pulled trailers the best, they got the best fuel mileage. And now you got Fords out there that have a comparable, even better motor. And you start to see the contestants driving things that, you know, pull the loads and get the best fuel mileage. And it, from a corporate perspective, real quick, if you remember, Chrysler way back in the day went broke. They went through bankruptcy. Then they merged. They merged with the Chrysler Group. They merged. And then they weakened from a corporate level before COVID. That whole group was weakening. And they brought in another European partner. I think it's Peugeot or something like that, into this corporate entity, right? The one that decides. And it sounds like they have, you know, a global marketing approach. And when you bring in new blood, new ideas, you know, sometimes some of the stuff that's working just goes away for the sake of change. Now, I will say this. They're not just leaving rodeo because I wanted to know. Do they not like our brand? Well, no, they're cutting back on all their commercial shows. They didn't have a presence at the LA Auto Show. Ram didn't. That would be like Wrangler not showing up at the NFR, right? You know, this is a major corporate auto show, which says that globally they're changing from activating at corporate events like rodeos and going into something else. They're moving that money. It's bad for rodeo. It's not good because
it's not personal against rodeo. That is good.
It doesn't sound like it's personal against rodeo, but you know, the lower deliverers are usually the ones that get caught. But so here's what I'm going to say. I hope that we have a lot of committees that are listening. This may be the first you've heard of this. And so what I would tell you to do, I would strongly recommend you do this. Call your local dealership that was involved. Talk to the owner of the dealership and let's try to save this program. Go out there, talk to the people you know that you dealt with your rodeo committees, and let's figure out if there isn't a collective way to keep the Ram brand, at least at the grassroots level, at a lot of rodeos in this country, because Ram has a strong brand and a 40-plus year relationship with rodeo. And I don't want to see it go away. But you know, the other question is, if you're a road committee, well, the PRCA says we have to get first right of refusal. So you may want to reach out to PRCA Properties, because if you're a rodeo and you were expecting this amount of corporate money from Ram, right? They're a sponsor. They get a shoot gate. They pay me this. You better find out if you still have to do first right of refusal and go out there and fill that automotive category, right? Because that means prize money for contestants. We can't afford to lose sponsors in rodeo, and we really can't afford as committees to not be told that that money's not coming. So everybody out there, do your research. Call the people. Find out if you have a deal. If you're a PRC rodeo, you have to give first right of refusal to a handful of sponsors, and RAM is one of them.
Let's also encourage communication on that from the PRCA so that people who don't hear this, I mean, let's encourage the PRCA to communicate that to every committee. That would be very helpful. Make that a public situation.
It would, and it could be, listen, what is perplexing to me is that there's not been an official statement from corporate about this. There's no statement because I've asked, and they have asked corporate for a statement. So it may be that we're the first, like we usually are, to report some news, but this stuff may be, these may be Zoom calls, Kendra, that are happening right now to figure out what's going on all of this. But heads up, and but we can collectively work together to keep the RAM involved in rodeo still on a local level. Here's the deal. They sell trucks at rodeos. I don't know if corporate recognizes this, but they sell units. Local dealers move trucks at rodeos. And by the way, that's why you do this, right? There's some people that sponsor rodeos that don't have an immediate sale of something, and trucks sell at rodeos. So,
well, we're as a sport, we're heavy on the grassroots anyway. So it sounds like here we go, grassroots. Let's go. Because obviously, any parking lot, rodeo people are Rams people, obviously. So,
So
people in New York City might not recognize it, but anyway, it's obviously a fact.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, as you said, Greg and I have been here in the balmy tropics of Colorado, as Sam Howery would say, where we got here on January 2nd, and we're fortunate enough to be a part of the production team for the legendary National Western here at this Denver Coliseum, which, you know, it's an old icon building. But when I walk in it, it reminds me of when I was a little boy walking into the Fort Worth Stock Show. Right, Coliseum, the old Coliseum. You know, those of us that have participated in rodeo, that walk through those stalls in the back that's frigid, and people are cleaning stalls and they're walking across right by the manure pile to go out to the parking lot where you park as a contestant. And so we're, like I mentioned earlier, we've been, I don't know, it's like 5 days below zero, unbelievable. And the whole country's getting hit. But here's what I'll say. I want to say this first. Hats off to contestants. I am amazed. Thank you, rodeo contestants, for going in a parking lot where you can get frostbite in 10 minutes and coming and competing for the fans at the National Western. Kendra, I would have thought that the turnouts and the amount of contestants would have plummeted. And we've had some, but not what you would think. And the competition here has been strong. The horses, I've seen primarily Servi and Bold horses, and I'm a horse guy. I'm a rough stock guy. The horses, we've had, I don't know, three or four rewrites. Well, we've done, Greg, how many performances?
I think we're on the 10th PRCA one.
PRCA.
Plus a Colorado versus the World and a couple PBRs.
Yeah, and you know, in case you've heard of the National Western, and Kendra, this is interesting. I think it's worth spending some time on the podcast. So here's how it works. Now they do a Colorado versus the World, which is basically contestants from Colorado's rodeos, contestants from other rodeos come together in a tournament bracket that's all held on one day, the first Saturday, where you know they break it down. They have a final Saturday night, and it's non-sanctioned. And it's a rough stock event with steer wrestling and barrel race. And then we do three PBR events, and we do a Mexican rodeo, and we do an MLK rodeo, and we do all these other different. But then we're in the PRCA brackets. And Kendra, you'll probably have some input on this from your athlete contingency. But they created brackets in this, which most of these big winter rodeos like. And basically you have two head. You go back to back here. You enter, you go back to back. And the aggregate leader the top three in each bracket, and there's 10 that compete a night. So 10 bareback riders on, if it's a two performance rodeo, they go back to back. The highest aggregate on three moves to next Saturday.
Does each bracket pay?
Well, here's what's interesting is that you advance with brackets, Kendra, right? To the semis, but they pay as a rodeo round. Does that make sense? So just because you don't advance doesn't mean that you don't get paid in the long round. Now you're advancing because there's additional money in the semifinals. Okay. So the top three advance.
So you could advance and run two head and not get paid.
No. But what I'm saying is you might not advance, but you'd get a pretty good check because you're paid in that first round as a total, right?
But it's not about
the threes.
But you advance based on a two-head average, right? So is it – could you advance in the top three out of your bracket and not get paid? Is that possible? Or does every bracket pay? I don't know.
I think every bracket pays, and I don't think it's possible because they go deep into pay in that first round. But I'll check. I don't want to say it's not possible, but I would say – I do know each bracket pays. Each bracket pays, okay? And then they pay on the overall, right? The overall, taking the brackets out of it, they pay on the overall. Again, I don't know the percentages of this. And they had a qualifier event, by the way, that paid pretty darn good to get into, they take the top X in the first brackets and then the qualifiers in the first brackets, and the top three move on to Saturday. And they'll have three semifinal rounds Saturday where the top four in each one of those performances moves on to championship Sunday for the crown of this event. And it's been really good competition. I mean, some notable things, Haven came, so our front of house, our announcer stand here is right by the timed event box, which is really pretty good for me because typically I'm on the other side of the arena and I'm really, as you know, Kendra, I'm really focused on rough stock, right? That's just instinctive for me. But I've got the timed event stuff right in front of me. So I learn more sitting in my folding chair for, I think I figured it out, 6 days straight total. I learn more watching that. And Haven came in and, he's big NFR and he didn't advance. And that was surprising to me. I expected him to advance. The timed event cattle, I'm not a timed eventer. Now, your boy roped yesterday, and I think he ropes today.
Tonight, right? Yeah, he got kicked.
Yeah, he got kicked. He didn't get, but I think, was he a 13, something like that? I don't know. If he has a good run tonight, he may have a shot in the top three. The cattle, there's a lot of cattle ran here. There's been some really bad timed event cattle. I've seen some really bad steers and I've seen some really good ones, but it's the luck of the draw. But I'll say that the competition's been strong. Good rides. I've seen some good bareback rides for people I've never heard of. Same thing in the bronc riding. Some of the notables have put on some pretty good shows. I thought the stock's been good. Now, if you watched the show yesterday, so when you're in the production business, we were rolling along pretty good. We were doing, and we got 12-minute openings and all these presentations, and we were averaging, a 2-hour and 10-minute rodeo, which I didn't think was too fast, but good for the public. And yesterday was one of those days where things fall apart. It started right at the beginning. We have the Western Airs. They're a legendary tradition here. It's a really cool thing where they take kids and they have a drill team, and it's just been here forever, 87 years, I think. And we feature that in the production, and this show started off, and they come out if you watch it on TV, and no lights. And let me tell you something, when you turn the lights off in the Denver Coliseum, you turn the lights off. Like, so I'm at the other end. I can't tell if I'm going to spotlight a cowboy in front of shoot four, I can't tell if he's there. Someone has to tell me. You can't see nothing. And they ride in pitch black with LED lights on their outfit, and right off the bat, the one carrying the American flag goes off her horse. So then it starts. And then we get to the bareback ride. And if you saw this, let me say that I've been in this a long, long, long time. And Austin Broderson is on a bareback horse. I think he's 18, 19-year-old kid. He's riding his bareback horse. He gets hung up. And so here's what happens. I don't like a hang up. And the pickup men, so back in the day, I remember 700 cowboys running out there when a guy hung up and mugging down the horse. And now the pickup men get a loop on the horse and stop it. Right? They stop him so the guy can get his hand out of the deal. Well, what happened was one of the pickup men came, he got hung up, and what pickup men do first is they'll try to pull the guy back up to release that bind. That's typically the first move of a good pickup man. If the kid's there and he's got his feet, whoever he is, right? If you pick him up just a little bit, get a hold of something, pick him up, you get the pressure off the hand and he comes out and everything's good. Well, when the pickup men went to pick him up, he lost his grip on him, and so he couldn't pick him up. And in doing that, he lost the loop he built. They build a loop to put around the head of the horse, right? He lost the loop. It shrunk on him. So as soon as he missed him, he goes to get his loop to put it on the horse, and it's not there. So then Chase Servey rides around Randy with a loop, gets a loop on the horse. Well, while this is happening, not only does the rigging starts to slip, first bad thing, right? Now, first thing, you get hung up, your rigging's up here, you've got your feet. Your head and your critical body parts are above the withers of the horse. Well, when that rigging starts to slip, your hand is now is in a bind underneath the horse. So that starts to make all of our guts. And then the rigging slipped to the back of the horse. And the young man quickly got knocked out. And I will say that this was one of the most horrific wrecks that I've seen, punishment on a young man's body until they got him loose, Kendra. It was
here. You know. Here's what I'll say. My dad is 85-year-old cowboy, and I don't have TV. I haven't seen it, but he watched that. And when I got to his house yesterday to load wood into his house, my dad's not a drama person. He was shaken by it, and he said, I haven't been so sick to my stomach watching something as when I was right there at the 1994 NFR and Brent Thurman was killed right in front of me. I have not been so upset by seeing something that was, and he's 85 years old and not into drama. So go ahead.
So he comes off and Keenan Vine's working for me here. Everybody immediately responds. And I immediately started praying in the announcer stand. That's how real this was. Like, I just took my headset off and started praying for him. He's not conscious. He is blood coming, severed an artery. They get him on the backboard and they get him into the bus and he's not conscious. And so the first report that I get is that he regained consciousness on the way to the hospital. That was positive. Then we don't hear anything. And so I'm just going to fast forward to the end because this is a miracle of God. I got a picture of Austin. He's got significant injuries. He's awake. His picture was a thumbs up in his hospital bed. His family from Canada is trying to get down here, but there's passport issues, so they can't get down there. So people have been visiting him. Binion was emotionally rattled by this and is committed to help this kid. And Binion and I are good friends. And here's the deal. They fixed a severed artery in his shoulder arm. His arm may have some nerve damage. He's cognizant. You know, he has a small brain bleed. I'm not a doctor, so don't quote. I'm just giving you what we would talk around the water cooler. A small brain bleed. He broke his neck, C7. But that's a neck brace, I guess, for 6 months. He's conscious. He's got some pooled blood in his abdomen. I honestly figured he was going to see Jesus before he got to the hospital, Kendra. And the fact that this young man's alive and stable, we have a report that he is stable. Now, he is not out of the woods. His shin is busted. He's broke he is broke from his ankles to the top of his head. He took so much punishment in that window there. But to see a picture that Binion sent me of this young man in the hospital bed, now his eyes full shut, I don't even know. It looked as if his face was crushed. Okay, I mean, that's how serious this was. And the fact that he's, and I guess the family is en route now. They've figured out the passport. They're en route to come down here. You know, the Piper Yules know that family, Kelsey and that family. They know that family. They've been communicating with me. That's how I know the family's getting down. Their boy, the Cash, he ropes with this kid. And I guess Cash is trying to convince him to stay, keep roping. And he decided to be a bareback rider. So I just want to thank the Lord, right, that he's alive and stable. And that is that's probably the best news of a really tough performance, is that we know that he's stable. And, you know, that wasn't the only thing that happened. You know, during the second performance of the Western Airs, so Rick Anderson, the photographer, is at the other end. One of the Western Airs falls off of the horse. The horse collides in the buck and shoot and compound fractures the rodeo photographer, Rick Anderson's leg in the arena. And then we had a cameraman in the arena, one of our really good handheld cameramen down in the arena with the camera on the clown, and the steer circles back, goes down the fence line. Randy's trying to rope it. Wipes my cameraman out, wipes him out. Maybe a broke nose, you know. So that happened, Kendra, all in one performance. Right?
So what you're telling me, oh my God, is I should just thank my lucky stars that my kid got there in one piece. So he got kicked and didn't win anything. Big deal. This sounds, I don't even, nightmarish start to finish.
Well, let me say this, and I said this in the production meeting, and I think it's worth all you no-spinners listening. We get into cars every day and we start driving, right? Because we do it all the time. And you don't recognize the dangers of being in an automobile. I think the same thing happens to us in the rodeo business. We're around it all the time. The odds are nothing's going to happen. But we need to protect each other and pay attention. These are large animals. We are running this event very, very fast. Flags flying in and out of the gate. Judges walking around. You know, the amount of moving pieces. And we better pay attention to being safe, because it's the one accident, Kendra. It's the headdress wrong on the horse. I don't care. They can take someone's life. And I am, from a producer standpoint, I stress to everybody, this is a wake-up call that we operate in a dangerous sport from, and I'm talking about the rope inside, Kendra, everything, right? Every piece of this, these are large animals at a fast rate of speed. All of you out there, you know, I know my kid's been riding forever, and I look in the back and, you know, a toddler walks behind a rope and horse. Stop it.
Your point, absolutely. And also, thanks for the reminder that I got a text from Las Vegas at the regional finals for the Americans saying some team repper just cut his thumb off. I haven't yet heard who it is, but point taken, this is a dangerous game we play.
Don't take for granted. Same thing being in a car. Don't take for granted, just because we're doing this so much, that someone's life, or not even life, you know, significant injuries can happen, and we understand the risk and we're all willing to take the risk, but we can't become complacent, right? Let's not become complacent. Don't do it with your family. Don't do it with your kids riding horses. Please don't do it in competition. Don't take for granted, because there's a fine line between being tough and being stupid. And let's collectively protect each other. Okay, but praise God that kid's, praise God, he's stable. And our prayers for Rick, I mean, the broken leg's not good, plates, he'll have his strobe lights and his camera back out before you know it. The young lady in the Western Air, she was fine. She ended up riding in the second part. So, you know, all things considered, we were blessed. There you have it. There's Ram. There's significant injuries. We go through Sunday here. It's still cold. It's supposed to lighten up. It's supposed to start to get above freezing, which maybe some of our camper pipes will start unfreezing. So yeah, it's been a good National Western. Really good fan, lots of fans, record crowds. I think they've been entertained. We'll see who progresses. It'll be fun to watch that Sunday. That Sunday's always fun, Kendra. It's fun to see these. It's great competition.
Good.
Greg, anything on your end from the National Western? We haven't even asked you. What? Tell us about your National Western real quick, just from a different perspective.
It's been going really good, actually. You know, it's nice when you do you come into these buildings, you know, after a couple years, you know the ins and outs, you know the secrets, you can knock it out. The performances have been going great until yesterday was kind of like a hiccup. But, you know, production-wise, everything's been going good. The video's been looking good. You know, it's been fun.
Well, so Greg is in a trailer on the other side of the chutes from me. It was 3 degrees. They did blow a breaker when they plugged in another heater and got everything back up.
The limit of the capacity of heaters we can put in the trailer.
So Kendra, what are you doing? You stood up. Are you getting blood flow into your legs? Or?
I had to walk my computer to my kitchen to plug it in because I got a little message saying it was on the brink of dying. Sorry. So.
Perfect. No worries.
Well, any final thoughts? I think we've kind of shared the inside baseball of where we're all at for this rendition of No Spin Rodeo number 19. Final thoughts, Kendra, anything?
To me, this is why we can't take Mets for breaks, because it doesn't matter what time of the year it is. There is always so much going on. I mean, how much ground did we just cover? And we could go on for hours longer. There's just so much going on. And so I think for me, it's what a place of privilege it is that we are where we are in this sport, us personally, you know, that when something happens, our phones ring, you know, it's a text, it's a phone call. We're out and about so much that not much gets by us. And some of it's tough, some of it's amazing, some of it's, you know, groundbreaking, something amazing, whatever it is. But this rodeo family of ours stays in pretty good touch, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, that's it for this episode of No Spin Rodeo. We would love all of you that are out there to subscribe. If you're new at podcasting, all that means is that your phone will tell you when a new No Spin comes out. So if you subscribe, if you see that and you're like, I ain't subscribing, they're probably going to try to sell me water hoses or something. Like, no. What it does is when you subscribe, it'll let you know when a new episode of No Spin Rodeo comes out. But all of you that don't want to subscribe, we just thank you all for listening to us. Please continue to give us more feedback. We want to be your favorite podcast in rodeo. Remember, we're news-based. Some of you might not find us that fun, but we're news-based. And if you want to be the expert at the water cooler on rodeo, you don't want to miss No Spin Rodeo. Thank you to Kendra Santos and Greg Teagarden. Thank you for joining us today from the National Western here in Denver and from an almost finished house in California. We'll see you next time on No Spin Rodeo.